trust is a fail. And the face you wear is natural.
Parish FD said the church burned down 4 months earlier. No prints. Put out an APB on Friends of Christ. A week later, they were in Franklin. Revival ministry. Old-time religion. You can imagine what Mr. Charisma thought of that.
What do you think the average IQ of this group is, huh?
Can you see Texas up there on your high horse? What do you know about these people?
Just observation and deduction. See a propensity for obesity, poverty, a yen for fairy tales. Cokes putting what few bucks they do have in the little wicker baskets being passed around. I think it's safe to say that nobody here's going to be splitting the atom, Marty.
You see that? Your fucking attitude. Not everybody wants to sit alone in an empty room beating off the murder manuals. Some folks enjoy community, the common good.
Yeah, but the common good's got to make up fairy tales, and it's not good for anybody.
Your sorrows pin you to this place. They divide you from what your heart knows. And there are a lot of good hearts out there. I'm looking out and I'm seeing a lot of good hearts out there. I see a lot of good hearts out there.
I mean, can you imagine if people didn't believe or things they'd get up to?
Exact same thing they do now. Just out in the open.
Bullshit. There'd be a fucking freak show of murder and debauchery, and you know it.
If the only thing keeping a person decent is the expectation of divine reward, then, brother, that person is a piece of shit. And I'd like to get as many of them out in the open as possible.
Well, I guess your judgment is infallible, piece of shit-wise. You think that notebook is a stone tablet?
What to say about life? You gotta get together. Tell yourself stories that violate every law of the universe. Just to get through the goddamn day. What's that say about your reality, Marty?
When you get to talking like this, you sound panicked.
You think it's all a scam, huh?
Mm.
All them folks?
Mm-hmm.
They just wrong?
Oh, yeah. Been that way since... One monkey looked at the sun and told the other monkey, he said, for you to give me your fucking share. People. So goddamn frail, they'd rather put a coin in a wishing well than buy dinner.
Jesus Christ, Jesus Christ, your arms open and closed. The echoes of my life can never contain to see the truth about you. You move the feather in the ash, you touch the leaf with its flame.
Transference of fear and self-loathing to an authoritarian vessel. It's catharsis. He absorbs their dread with his narrative. Because of this, he's effective in proportion to the amount of certainty he can project. Certain linguistic anthropologists think that religion is a language virus that rewrites pathways in the brain, dulls critical thinking.
Well, I don't use $10 words as much as you, but for a guy who sees no point in existence, you sure fret about it an awful lot. And you still sound panicked.
At least I'm not racing to a red light. So we all got what I call a life trap. His gene deep certainty that things will be different. That you'll move to another city and meet the people that'll be the friends for the rest of your life. That you'll fall in love and be fulfilled. Like in fulfillment. And closure. Where the fuck those two fucking empty jars to hold this shitstorm. Like nothing's ever fulfilled. Until the very end. And closure. No, nothing is ever over.
Oh,
Mr. Terry.
You recognize this girl? I don't know for sure.
Well, as far as I'm concerned, that's the finest dialogue you can get. Boy, I'll tell you, that lays it out there. And if you don't get it, you better listen again and again and again until you do get it. Terrible Tommy here. Terrible Tommy's in the bunker right here in north central Indiana, the Hoosier State. That's right, on a blustery, windy, rather cool day here in the Hoosier land. We're at P.O. Box 401, Warsaw, Indiana, 46581. Our giant website, resist.com. And I just made sure that all our archives are open up there for the radio show. Like I said the other day, some people are contacting us from other countries wanting to even use our shows to learn English. Well, I don't know whether they're going to get learn it very well listening to my English. Yeah, okay, man. It is it's April the 27th, 2015. And boy, I'll tell you, Moon's Day. This month is going fast. God, they go faster all the time, man. I can't hold on. I can't keep up. No, I can't. Well, as we left my personal situation at the end of the week, last week, where my van blew a transmission, dirty van. However, I got, like I told you, I got 4 years out of that thing, and I drove her pretty hard and paid a grand for it. So anyhow, I started looking around yesterday, and sure enough, I found my new Super Duper vehicle. It's a 1997 Dodge Dakota Sport. Oh, it's nice, man. It was for sale about half an hour's drive from me. Boy, I got on my gal's car and we went running up there, man. And I got it. And boy, it's beautiful. It's all black. Yes, yeah, sinister black, my favorite color. So Tommy's back on the road again. And that's right. Now I can haul a lot more stuff with a pickup truck, man. That's right. Well, we got some prose in here from one of our good buddies, a guy I've known for a long, long time. Yeah, we've been on the front lines for quite a while. He's a lot younger than I am, though. I remember the time we was out in the mountains and there was some skinheads and so forth, and everybody was drinking. He says, "I'll show you guys," and he picked up the back end of a Toyota car off the ground. So, not to be outdone, I said, "Well, hell, I can do that," and I did it. I got that back end up a foot above the ground. I don't think I've been the same since. But he said, "I'll show you," and he went over to a full-size El Camino. It lifted the back wheels off the ground. I said, "I quit. That's as far as I go." Anyhow, here's what he's been putting together. Finally, a glimmer of hope. A white protest fighting the police in Calais, France, over the thousands of black niggers that overwhelmed that unfortunate town. Of course, the media only shows the protests in support of the black plague. Dumb white hipster idiots laying around in body bags saying the European Union is not doing enough to help. They're worried that there won't be any niggers left to coddle. The Mediterranean Ocean is racist. It has killed more niggers this year than the white power movement in America has in the last 100 years. Back on the home front, the Coast Guard has reported thousands upon thousands of Cubans are coming ashore in South Florida in the wake of the new friendly relations with the USA. Rumor turned out to be fact that they're not aware of that they make that 90-mile voyage in whatever leaky piece of shit they can find, they automatically qualify for refugee status and cannot be sent back. The snowball effect has compounded all these pernicious events, with many others, making these days the most dangerous the white race has ever faced worldwide. We are now up against the edge of the precipice. These are the most critical days ever. The problem is, as you well know, that it's not getting bad quickly enough. By the time whites rise up, they may be only 10% of what we have today. True. Like Henrique told Speer in April 1945, quote, "Even in the best circumstances, I will lose a battalion a day. It is untenable," unquote. We need to be in such desperate times that a white person will be happy and relieved to see another white person and put all classism and differences aside. And we're still quite a long way from that. Hurry up, Jews, and overplay your hand so we can get on with this nice, healthy race war. Thank you. And I'm not going to give your name because I think you're wanted on about 3 continents. Yeah. Yeah. Well, here's a little Jew hideaway you might be interested in. Caught in a scrum of day trippers haggling over brightly colored glazed ceramic skulls and $20 cigars purportedly from Havana, the reverberating amplified guitars blasting hard rock from the 24 or so bars lining both sides of Hidalgo Avenue, and the scent of fresh Cheerios and bacon-wrapped hot dogs drifting through the humid air from the vendor carts across the plaza from the Church of the Immaculate Conception with the towering statue of the Virgin Mary for a steeple. It's not long before your Ashkenazi sixth sense of heightened cognitive dissonance kicks in. First you come upon the hand-lettered messages in cursive Hebrew slapped across the display windows and easels poking out of the sidewalk restaurants and lancherias, $35 a night hotels, dive shops, day spas, ice cream parlors, jewelry showrooms, and bikini boutiques. Then an advertisement for today's special, shakashuka, the North African tomato, garlic, and vegetable dish popular with young Jews, comes into focus from a post inside the New Age Magagu coffee shop. I still haven't told you where you're at, right? 2 blocks over across the islands, 24-hour health clinic, the diver's emergency hyperbaric chamber, your eyes home in on the black-handed painting lettered on the kosher sign running the width of the seashell white balcony overhanging the entrance to the Cafe Maya, with all of the dairy and veterinarian or vegetarian menu, fresh baked bagels, and backpacker-friendly free Wi-Fi. Only then do you catch sight of the stubble-cheeked, lanky young man in jeans with the buzz cut and the black-striped white zit-zit vest, knotted fringes billowing languidly in the Caribbean breeze, racing to inhale the final draws of the last cigarette before the sundown and the arrival of the shabus off the Yucatan coast. Now you're getting a hint. A 20-minute, $5.50 ferry ride from Cancun, to where most of the white middle class like to go. My father-in-law contracted a deadly disease in Cancun and ended up killing him. He languished for about 4 or 5 years, and then he died, thanks to Cancun. Isla Majors is a 5-mile-long, half-mile-wide island that's got its name from the figurines of partially clad females discovered by the 16th-century Spanish explorers among the ruins of the Temple Eshchel, the Mayan goddess of fertility, located on the island's southernmost shore. Now it's a fishing village, home to a Mexican naval base and tourist venue. with its cool-to-the-touch granulated coral and shell beaches, calm waters, accessible reefs, and abundance of marine life, Isla Majors is a popular destination for snorkelers and divers and families wanting a less hectic and more affordable alternative to Cancun. Day trippers seeking glimpses of indigenous culture from behind a wheel of a rented gasoline-powered golf cart. And the backpackers lured by $11.75 a night dormitory beds, oceanside bar, juggling and yoga sessions, volleyball, hammocks, and casual hookups featured at the Poknas Hotel, where you can score an approximate gram of local pot from a nearby bartender for $15 U.S. On a recent night, someone stapled a notice near the hostel entrance seeking to fill out the crew of a 42-foot sailboat departing for Cuba in 3 days. No experience, skills, or nautical qualifications specified. Well, there you go. If Jewish Isla Majors has an aristocracy, Miriam Natis Greenstein, proprietor of the Sukasa beach cottages on the Sacbojo Road overlooking the bay, would be its grand dame. Slight of built, with gray hair teased out to an elegant anachristic. Her piercing gray eyes tight. Well, I'm not going to go into all this, but the point is, you wonder how many war criminals, Jew war criminals, are hiding out in places like that. Oh, there's no Jew war criminals? Think again. There are thousands. And they like little niches, like off, see, that's a half an hour off the coast of Cancun. And that's where these guys like to hide out. And that's where hundreds of thousands of these Jews got out of Europe and began to hide out all over the place. Every little island, every little corner, they're hiding out. So if you want to find out the war criminals and the true genocidalists of the European people, I think you better start looking around the nooks and crannies of South America. I think there's a lot more Jew war criminals in South America than Nazi war criminals in South America. Just a thought. Yeah. I can't believe it. There's crooked Jews. I mean, the chosen pipples over there in Israel. They got crooks over there, man. I'll tell you. If you can't trust a Jew, who can you trust?
An alleged land theft ring numbering at least 32 suspects, including several lawyers, has been uncovered in northern Israel. A spokesman for the Israel Polisis Leha 433 anti-corruption unit said Monday. The suspects, most of whom are residents of the north of Israel, allegedly forged deeds and other official documents, engaged in fraud.
Let's do that one over again. I lost some of that. Oh, well. Anyhow, you know, a bunch of Jews over there in Israel are screwing Jews. I can't believe it. Can you believe that? The chosen pibbles? Evidently, that was real estate over there by the Sea of Galilee, man. That's where the Jesus hung out, man, with his boys, with his merry guys. Well, they had a party over there at Bergen and Belsen. Let's see what the hell they were doing over there.
Germany's president paid tribute to Britain for liberating the Nazi concentration camp Bergen-Belsen 70 years ago and restoring humanity to the country at a ceremony Sunday attended by approximately 2,000 people, including about 70 survivors, under gray, overcast skies and pouring rain. More than 50,000 Jewish deportees from across Europe lost their lives at the camp in western Germany between 1941 and 1945, including the young Jewish diarist Anne Frank, in addition to 20,000 prisoners of war.
I think they have these things about every day, don't they? Or maybe once a week, or maybe once a month. To never, ever, 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 ever forget this stuff. Well, there's a group that's trying to get people to come from the United States to Israel to volunteer their time and work for survivors. Yeah. It's a nonprofit initiative that pairs young professional internationals and Israeli Jews with the survivors of the Shoah who feel lonely. Working off the big brother, big sister model, our young volunteer will adopt a grandmother or a grandfather in Israel that is in need of love and attention. Our goal is to train as many volunteers as possible and to connect these two communities. Young professionals seeking to make meaningful contributions and the survivor in need of warmth and connection. While we still are blessed with the presence of this holy generation. A holy generation? Adopt a SAFTA is generously supported by the Am Yisrael Foundation and the Jewish Federation of Greater Los Angeles. The problem is, plus 50,000 plus lonely Holocaust survivors in Israel. A report published by the Foundation for the Benefit of Holocaust Victims in Israel indicates that 40% of the Shoah survivors feel lonely. 12,000 lack even proper heating in their houses, in their apartments. And 5% of them suffer from shortages of food, and some live on the streets. Wait a minute. That can't be so. They wouldn't do that to their own people. The CEO of the Foundation for the Benefit of Shoah Survivors in Israel says, quote, one hungry or lonely Holocaust survivor on Passover Eve is a failure of the state of Israel. Well, I would think so. The younger generation will never forgive us if we fail to care for our older generation with the respect it deserves. I call on all relevant parties headed for the finance minister in his office to provide all necessary means immediately, unquote. However, adopt a SAFTA, we do not believe that any citizen should ever wait for the government to act and so on and so on and so on. So there you go. Thousands of Holocaust survivors are lonely, they're sick, they don't have heat for their apartments in Israel. Do you see that on your local news? I didn't see anybody talking about that on my news, baby. But if you want to get involved with that thing, they'll fly you over there to Israel and you can babysit a Holocaust victim. Wait a minute. This can't possibly be true. It can't. How could it be true? How could it? Demonstrators have attacked nigger migrants in Tel Aviv. In a protest against refugees and asylum seekers, it indicates an increasingly volatile mood in Israel over what it terms as infiltrators. Wow, man. Miri Regev, a member of the Israeli parliament, told the crowd, quote, the Sudanese are a cancer in our body. Better get these black bastards out of here. The vast majority of asylum seekers in Israel are from Sudan and Eritrea, and that's solidly Negro. Around 1,000 demonstrators took part in the demonstration on Wednesday night, waving signs that said, Tom Metzger's right, infiltrators get out of our homes and our streets. They're no longer safe for our children. Tom Metzger's always been right. A car containing Africans, that means Negroes, was attacked, and shops serving the refugee community were looted in Israel. This is Israel. This is God's country. Oy vey. 17 people were arrested. A reporter for the Israeli daily Mariv described it as an unbridled rampage, an explosion of pent-up rage. Gee, when are we going to have some of that pent-up rage break out here? It's okay to be anti-Negro in Israel, but not in the United States. Quote, suddenly one of the protesters noticed that one of the cars waiting for traffic to move were two young black, dark-skinned Negroes, apparently foreign workers. For the hundreds of inflamed and enraged young people, That was all they needed. Within minutes, they dismantled. There was no other word for to describe it. The car and its passengers, some of them smashed the windows with their hands in the rocks. Others kicked the door, bent the plastic parts, and tried to attack the people inside. Quote, "I'm not from Sudan. I'm not from Sudan," unquote, the driver tried to tell the assailants, but nobody was listening at that stage. Just get those niggas. God commands it. Yahweh says, get them. The protests following a claim on Sunday by the Prime Minister, Nitwit Netanyahu, that, quote, "illegal infiltrators were flooding the country," unquote. Ah, how about that? Nitwit is a racist and threatening the security and identity of the Jewish state. Is that different than us saying they're threatening our white culture and our white state? Quote, "this phenomenon is very grave and threatens the social fabric of society, our national security, and our national identity," he said. Sounds a little bit like Uncle Adolf to me there. I mean, you know. "The government is constructing a fence along the Egypt-Israeli border to deter these invaders and asylum-seeking niggers, and is building what will be the world's largest detention center prison, capable of holding up to 11,000 niggers. It is also seeking court approval to deport up to 3,000 nigger refugees back to South Sudan, despite concerns over the humanitarian crisis and their human rights violations. Israel's police chief has urged the state to allow asylum workers to work in order to avoid economic and social problems." You're not going to be very popular as a police chief, buddy. How about that? See, you don't see this on the evening news. You don't see it on NBC, CBS, MSNBC, all of those. You don't see that, do you? Well, I'm bringing it to you right here on the most important news service there is. Terrible Tommy's news service right here by Terrible Tommy's Terrible Tavern and Steakhouse and Filling Station. The stark reality of Israel's immigration policy is embodied in Holat, a detention center situated in the middle of the Negev Desert in southern Israel. It is a place which indefinitely holds Negro Sudanese and Negro Eritrean migrants invaders, many of whom have fled bloodshed and persecution in their home countries. Halat is the final stop on Israel's immigration agenda. Once there, trapped and in limbo, the asylum seekers are lawfully offered a token repatriation fee to encourage them to accept so-called voluntary departure packages and go to hell back there where you came from, relocated to third-party African countries even. How come we don't see this on the evening news or the progressive radio shows? The law which forces them there came into effect in January 2012, allowing the government to put long-term illegal invaders in desert detention centers for up to a year with no air conditioning, and offering repatriation grants of $3,500. Go on back, man. Take the money. But in September 2014, the Supreme Court ordered the closure of Halat within 90 days. Justice Fogelman explained that the Halat infringes on the right to human dignity. Quote, "infiltrators do not lose 1 ounce of their right of human dignity just because they reach the country in this way or another," unquote. There must be one of those liberals over there. More than 50,000 asylum seekers have arrived in Israel in the last decade, entering through the border with Egypt. Well, let's see here. Is there any more to this? This has got me all worked up. Okay. Benjamin Netanyahu, Nitwit, warned that illegal infiltrators flooding the country threatened the security and identity of the Jewish state. In a speech in early December, the Interior and Environment Chair, Mary Regev, vowed that the center will not close on the 22nd of December as ruled by the Supreme Court. They can go screw themselves. They're crazy kikes. We want to stop this invasion. We're not crazy. This law will have teeth, and it won't be up to judges to determine our immigration policy. Rather, the elected government, Regev has said. Fuck those judges. In the making, they're a bunch of kikes. We're good Jews. In the making of this short film in April this year, we heard fresh accounts of many former Halat detainees having decided to return to East Africa out of despair, only to be arrested by state authorities upon their arrival. They are then either imprisoned for treason or disloyalty for initially fleeing the country, or simply disappear without a trace. Down with the alligators. All of the detainees have lived in Israel for at least 5 years. Many own businesses and speak fluent Hebrew. And some are orphans who have just graduated from Israeli high school. Their visible frustration at finding themselves in this situation is understandable. Shortly after we visited, more than 800 men marched out of the Halat and through the desert in the searing heat towards the Egyptian border. They demanded to be recognized as refugees, releasing from the facility, issuing the following statement, unquote, or quote, "We have made a commitment to keep on struggling for our basic rights, and you have done, stupid, and we will never give up. Justice and equality will last forever. Bye, I'm going to Egypt." Don't let the screen door hit you in the ass. Which asks the question, should we be recruiting in Israel? Sounds to me like there's a sizable number of Israeli Jews that want to join up. Moving all along here, migrants everywhere need to be wary of the European fascist and right-wing Israeli nationalists. They're using the same racist rhetoric. Oh, wow. It's getting deeper, boys. Last month in Israel, demonstrations against African refugees in Tel Aviv turned violent. Protesters looted shops, broke windows, and firebombed buildings, including a nursery. Ah, Kristallnacht. Kristallnacht in Israel. Days ago, arsonists torched the home of 10 African migrants in Jerusalem, injuring 4 and leaving an unequivocal graffiti painted all over the outside of the house. Quote, "Get out of the neighborhood," unquote. Jeez. Is that anti-Negroid? On Monday, Israeli TV reported that Haifa's consul had warned local businesses that they risk losing their licenses if they employed nigger refugees. And the shopkeepers in the southern town of Darat were refusing to serve migrants. They can't even get up to the lunch counter. Israeli statistics show that 60,000 Negro migrants have entered the country in the past 7 years through the Egyptian Sinai Desert, many of them asylum seekers, fleeing repression or war in Sudan, South Sudan, Eritrea. Israel, much like Europe, seems consumed with worry about being swamped with developing Negro refugees. Although, perhaps in part because of its location, the fears in Israel sound more visceral. So far, Israel's approach has been to build a steel fence on the Egyptian border and a giant detention center in the south, and to pass a law that allows the detention of migrant niggas for more than 3 years. Since its creation, fewer than 150 people have been recognized as refugees in Israel. Get on out of here, black boy. We learned everything we know from Tom Metzger, man, and we're going to use it over here. The crude response from politicians has been disturbing as the scenes of the streets. Last week, the Interior Minister Eli Yishyak said, quote, most of the people arriving here are Muslims who think the country doesn't belong to us anyhow. Well, it really doesn't. The white man. Oh, he said, use this term. He said, who think the country doesn't belong to us, the white man. Oh, Jews are suddenly, they're starting to discover they got white skin. That's going to piss off of the identity Christians. All of a sudden, when the Jews get their back to the wall, suddenly they get white. He has also described the refugees as rapists and criminals. Weeks ago, Miri Regev, a Likud member in the Knesset, referred to the Sudanese people in Israel as a cancer. Former TV presenter and emerging politician Yair Lapid said last month lambasted some Knesset members as inciters, leading a program, and wrote, quote, I wonder how they have the nerve to call themselves Jews. The sight of the Jewish-Israeli sons and daughters of refugees, echoing pretty much window-smashing act by act and racist line by line scenes from historic anti-kike programs in Europe, isn't an easy one. Nor is the uncomfortable reality that hatred of refugees is so easily stoked in Israel because these refugees are blacker than the ace of spades. Having for years practiced a policy of separation between Jews and the subjugated Palestinians, both in the occupied territories and within Israel, the country has incubated a form of casual racism and puritanical appraisal of the other in which anti-migrant sentiments can flourish, and behind the scenes some of them are even calling for the return to Uncle Adolf. Last month, the Israeli historian and commentator Tom Segev told AP, quote, what disturbs me most is the racist atmosphere. For several years now, Israeli society has been moving in that direction, unquote. At one protest against migrants last year, an Israeli demonstrator explained her hostility, quote, they aren't Jews. Why should they be here with us, unquote. The language itself is a giveaway. Protesters, politicians, and reporters alike have labeled African nigger refugees as infiltrators, invaders, and the same fear-induced security-conscious term used to describe Palestinians. No wonder, then, that the Prevention of Infiltration Law, introduced during the 50s to stop Palestinian refugees returning, has just been amended to apply to niggers. Meanwhile, gut-level anxiety over demographics are everywhere. Rabbis and ministers are warning that migrants, just like Palestinians, will be used as a sort of birthrate bombing tactic in Israel, outnumbering the Jewish population and thereby sinking the nation. I told you so. I told you so. Terrible Tommy's been telling you that for a long time. You're a very small country, and you don't have that many white-skinned people there. And demographically, they're going to swamp you. The rhetoric may be ramped up, but far-right Israeli ministers are basically repeating the anti-immigration, anti-Muslim sentiments of rising far-right parties in Europe. The whole world's Nazi. That isn't a coincidence, because perversely, the two have recently found common cause. In the past few years, Israeli ministers have played host to far-right European leaders and made clear they share values of the supposed menace of Islam, and especially Muslim migrants. Geert Wilders, leader of the Dutch Freedom Party, is one of the several far-right figures who have visited Israel and met hard-right ministers there. During one trip, Wilders met the foreign minister Avigdor Lieberman and spoke of Israel as a front line in the fight to counter non-white Islam. Quote, if Jerusalem falls, he warned, Amsterdam and New York will be next. Wow. Did you see this on the evening news? I didn't see any of this shit. This affiliation is great news for Europe's far-right parties who seek to sanitize their image and whose history of anti-Jewism has been a block to gaining mainstream acceptability. Let's see. The Institute for Strategic Dialogue. I love those kind of groups. For Strategic Dialogue, a research group, has warned that far-right parties in Europe are on the rise in part because they've opportunistically buried anti-Jewism in favor of an apparently more palatable stance against Islam and Muslim migrants. How lucky for them that the Jewish-Israeli politicians are helping them with that. What a deal we got going here. No doubt it's comforting for Israel's far-right to find allies that lip-sync claims of a frontier battle. But when the people who perfectly understand who you are also the ones with a history of violently hating you, it's time to worry about what exactly is in this relationship. Well, this is a new game. It's a new day. It's all new stuff, man. You can't judge it by what happened before. People are suffering right now on all sides, and you know, Israel's current attacks on African refugees, that's nigger if you don't understand, are bad enough, but if this outbreak even partially signals a dovetailing agenda between European fascists and far-right Israeli nationalists, wow! That's a toxic arrangement and trouble for migrants, nigger migrants, Muslims, and Jews everywhere. Run for your life. Run for your life. Come on, God. Come on down here and straighten this thing out, please. Maybe even Mother Mary. Come on down here. We need some help. Now let's see what they're talking about with the Israeli left here. Israelis have rarely seemed so despondent. During a recent trip ahead of the impending elections, the popular sentiment I kept hearing was of Israel as a country that screws its own citizens. There's a paucity of hope, a frustrated paralysis over corruption, cronyism, and ego-driven politics. Which reminds me how I've predicted for a long, long time that Israel is in steep decline, and it will be no more at some point. Nobody believes voting will change anything. Well, that's what we believe. That's what most of us believe here. At least we're coming together on something. Sadly, some Israelis told me their best case scenario was that their children would immigrate someplace, any place, maybe to Arkansas, and Governor Huckabee will he'll hug them and take care of them. Israel is expected to elect the most right-wing government in its history on Tuesday, which they did, a coalition that will make the current prime minister, nitwit, look like a man of peace. Yeah. This is great. His Likud party is running ever more extreme candidates and is outflanked to the right by Jewish Home, a rapidly rising Palestine-denying new settlers party that is predicted to play a key role in the coalition, but alongside headlines heralding the rightward lurch, I like those adjectives, rightward lurch, voters turned out is expected to plunge, that has prompted ubiquitous state-sponsored commercials with the rag tagline, "Vote now, moan later." Lower motivation is highest among the center-left voters. Endemic levels of misery and apathy are tied to a popular conviction that Israeli politicians of all stripes will continue to serve an elite while ignoring everybody else. Gee, that sounds familiar. Except to expose the wider population to constant fear and endless war. That sounds familiar too. The increasingly splintered center and left parties are predicted to win up to 57 out of the 120 Knesset seats. As the nation's mood seems to glim ever rightwards, polls still show a majority support for the creation of the sovereign Palestinian state. anything. Just get them off our ass. The mass social movement of 2011, a united cry against the nation's crippling neoliberal economics, brought 500,000 of the nation's 8 million onto the streets. The largest protest in Israel history. How is it possible in this context for the left to be so powerless in politics? The straight answer is that the Israeli left has never really been left-wing. Well, that sounds like this country too. Labor has long been the elite established party dominated by Jews of European origins. In other words, those white-skinned Jews who monopolized power and discriminated against Jewish communities from Muslim and Arab countries labeled Mizrahi or Eastern. Such discrimination, the lopsided allocation of resources such as land and education, the cultural negation, was so bad that ethnicity is now too often synonymous with class warfare. Yay! In the late 1970s, the right-wing Likud exploited this to win a landslide victory. Its leader at the time, Menachem Begin, a terrorist from Poland, toured city slums and peripheral towns proclaiming his party would never dishonor or deprive the Mizrahi population like Labor did. The wealth gap widened under Likud's naked capitalism, Ronald Reagan style, but mistrust of a condescending Eurocentric left wing still holds sway, especially as ethnic and racial discrimination remains an unacknowledged divide. This sounds like Mississippi in 1960. In a new documentary about the left, which recently aired on Israeli TV, the Iraqi-born Israeli author Sami Michael explains this crucial myopic contradiction with the pro-peace left. They see the Maharahis as a danger because we bring Arab culture, enemy culture, with the Israeli left hates. He says it's nice for them to be photographed with Arabs to say that they have Arab friends. Oh, that sounds, that rings like something I've heard here. My best friend's a nigger. Yeah, he is. Yeah, we call him Rastass. It's nice for them to be photographed with Arabs to say that they have Arab friends, that they want peace. But peace with whom? First of all, make peace with your own people. But Israeli left can't make peace with the Palestinians either. Not even with the Palestinians who make up 20% of Israel's population, but are second-class citizens because of systematic discrimination. I can't believe God's chosen people would do these things. No Israeli government has included Arab political parties. Even in 1999, after gaining 94% of the Palestinian vote in Israel, Labor snubbed this section and built a coalition without even a token Arab party. When peace talks with the Palestinians at Camp David failed, the then Labor Prime Minister Ehud Barak proclaimed that Israel had no partner in peace, a cowardly own goal that kicked away a political foundation stone. This is what made the right wing stronger, said Asma Zakalaka, leader of DAM, the Jewish Arab Workers Party. Well, there's a lot more to this, but I think you catch on. Do you catch on? Do you really catch on what's happening? Not what the evening news is saying, not what the progressives are saying, not what the conservatives are saying, but what's really happening. Shame, shame. Well, you might find this interesting about a black judge that attacked black parents and so forth and so on. Well, let's listen to this and see if it makes any sense to you.
To be honest with you, yes, it is. And I just have to read it in paragraph 6. I assume the victims in this case are white.
Yes.
It troubles me greatly that this statement says, this incident has had the most impact on my daughter. She's in constant fear of black men. When I'm running errands we come across a black male. She holds me tight and begs me to leave. That has affected her relationships at school and relationship with our African-American friends. Really? You don't have to answer for it, but I want to make that part of the record. I'm offended by that. I'm deeply offended by that. That they would be victimized by an individual and then express some kind of fear of all black men. I wonder if the perpetrator had been white, would they be in fear of white men? The answer would probably be no. I'm offended by that. It's not going to affect what happens here, but I want to make it part of the record, and perhaps you pass this on. I find this very offensive.
And I certainly understand the court's outrage there. I guess I really don't, but...
Well, you understand.
I understand where you're coming from, Your Honor.
I understand exactly where I'm coming from.
Here's why we object to probation, Judge. But what we're really talking about here is that probation would unduly depreciate the seriousness of what happened. This was a home invasion. The victims were a husband, a wife, and a three-year-old little girl.
And make no mistake about it, I voiced some outrage about a statement, a portion of that statement. But I'm also outraged that anyone would go into anyone else's home and commit a violent offense like this. That's outrageous also. This little girl has certainly been victimized, and she can't help the way that she feels. My exception is more with her parents, and they're accepting of that kind of mentality and that fostering of that, those kind of stereotypes. And I'm going to grant your motion today for probation. I know the combo's position. And here, both stands, I can't say for sure. I got to look at everything. But you commit an offense like this with a handgun, I'm going to send you to prison more times than not. I think the equity's way in favor of you having an opportunity to redeem yourself.
Judge Olu Stevens has spent his career working for our community, being a leader. Olu married his college sweetheart, a doctor who's a cancer specialist. Olu Stevens prosecuted cases involving abused and neglected children, and Judge Stevens is the highest rated judge in the Louisville Bar Association poll. No wonder Judge Olu Stevens has received every major endorsement.
I'm proud to be serving our community, and I'm humbled by your faith and confidence in me.
Vote Judge Olu Stevens.
Let me give you a little more background to this story. The three-year-old was watching SpongeBob SquarePants when two thugs broke into their house and robbed them at gunpoint. They were black, of course. When the case went to trial, the two black assailants were found guilty. As part of the sentencing, Jordan and Tommy Gray wrote in a victim impact statement that their daughter is still in constant fear of black men. Well, that might save her life later on. Tommy Gray implored the prison time for the attackers. Since the crime, Tommy Gray and the attack has left deep psychological wounds on their young daughter. That's right. Whenever they're running errands and we come across a black male, she holds me tight and begs me to leave, the mother said. It has affected her friendship at school and our relationships with the African-American friends. Tommy Gray also wrote that since the crime, his daughter has been terrified of black males and that probation was not sufficient punishment for Gregory Wallace, 27, who had pleaded guilty to robbery. If holding a little girl at gunpoint gets you probation, then our system is flawed, Gray said. But at sentencing time, Judge Olu Stevens of Louisville lay at the small child and her parents, not at the thugs who committed the crime. Over and over again, he announced how offended he was that a small child would be traumatized by the robbery, and she might be afraid of black men, and that her parents are fostering her stereotype. Quote, I am offended, I'm deeply offended, that they would be victimized by an individual and express some kind of fear of all black men, unquote, he said. The little girl certainly has been victimized, and she can't help the way she feels, he said. My exception is more with their parents, and they're accepting the kind of mentality that fosters these types of stereotypes. Well, they were niggers. They threatened the kid's life and the parent's life. What do you expect, nigger? He then laid down his sentence of 6 months probation and no jail time for these two guys. Home invasion with guns. To pile on, Stevens then took to his Facebook page, which seems to have been deleted. The link is a cache, to continue to attack the little girl and her parents, apparently as a family of horrible racists. Well, I think they're beautiful racists. The Courier-Journal reported that Stevens said that he did nothing improper by criticizing a small child's victim impact statements on Facebook. Quote, I was cautioned the parents against allowing racial stereotypes to impact their behavior and of their child. But leading experts on judicial ethics condemned his remarks, as did Commonwealth Attorney Tom Wine and friends of the family of the Grays, some who have started a Facebook page urging Stevens to be removed from office. Quote, Judge Stevens blamed and shamed the victims, said the girl's paternal grandmother, Dawn Renee Bryant, who said her daughter-in-law cried when she read the judge's post. Quote, it's very disturbing to be called something you're not. Well, however you should be. Wine said his office would disavow any racist victim impact statement, but the statements made by the victims in this case, quote, were not intended to be or were not, unquote. Quote, the mother of the three-year-old was describing how the home invaders armed with guns affected her family, Wine said. She differentiated how adults and a child were affected. Well, there you go. There you go, baby. Maybe somebody's wising up. But they need to dump this judge. However, it's good to have one like that around, I think. It's going to turn people who are not racially conscious into being racially conscious. And that's what I mean. Worse is better. The more they do shit like that, in the long run, it's better for these white people. Well, here's a story from World War II. A Japanese university has opened a museum acknowledging that its staff dissected downed American airmen while they were still alive during World War II. A gruesome display at the newly opened museum at Kyushu University explains how 8 U.S. POWs were taken to the center's medical school in Fukuoka after their plane was shot down over the skies of Japan in 1945. The flyers were subjected to horrific medical experiments. Doctors dissected one soldier's brain to see if epilepsy could be controlled by surgery and removed parts of the livers of the prisoners as part of the test to see if they would survive. Another soldier was injected with seawater in an experiment to see if it could be used instead of sterile saline solutions to help dehydration. 12 airmen were aboard the Captain Marvin Watkins B-29 when it took off from Guam on a bombing raid against the airfield at Fukuoka. They all bailed out when their aircraft was rammed by a Japanese fighter. Local residents converged on the surviving airman as they landed. One emptied his pistol at the crowd before shooting himself dead. Another was stabbed to death by locals. Of the remaining airmen, Captain Watkins was taken for interrogation and survived the war. The rest died during the horrific vivisection experiments. Well, I don't blame the Japanese for killing every one of these guys. If somebody bombed my country, my town, my village, my house, and I could get a hold of them, I'd skin them alive. That is not the problem, but doing this type of experimentation on prisoners of war is also not acceptable. Not acceptable. Tadashi Tono, one of the doctors involved in the experiments, later dedicated his life to exposing the atrocities after the war and wrote a book against the wishes of colleagues who wanted their crimes to be lost in the mists of time. In 1995, he told the Baltimore Sun that one of the U.S. flyers had been stabbed by the locals after his plane had crashed. and presumed he was going to be treated for the wound when he was taken to an operating theater for live dissection instead. Well, that's interesting. How come the Germans all got treated so badly and executed and so forth? How come they didn't bring all this out about the Japanese? We do know that the emperor had his own private lab in the palace and was experimenting on stuff like this. That truth has never totally come out. Only the Germans are bad people. Only the Germans.